Hi, this is the iFaith first video sermon of two on the book of Ecclesiastes. We're in our series on the wisdom literature. We've understood what that is. We've had a couple of talks from Job, a couple more from Proverbs. And now we come to Ecclesiastes, which is written by Solomon or by someone who's adopting the character of Solomon. It's a beautiful book. It's a hard-hitting book. Often it's very moving to those who feel empty, who are seeking God. And certainly it's not to be missed. Oh, I'll be reading from a version of an Old Testament scholar. His name is Murphy. This version may be a little bit different to yours, but I don't think that will really matter. And I'm going to read much of chapter 1, and then we'll just have a few other verses after that. And let me explain one thing. You'll hear the word Kohelet. I'm changing that to assembly leader because Kohelet means the leader of the congregation. So I'll change that word, even though it's the correct Hebrew word. I'm going to make it into English. You're okay with that, right? Okay. So we read this. The words of the assembly leader, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the assembly leader, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. All is meaningless, in other words, all is empty. What profit does one have for all the toil with which one toils under the sun? One generation goes and another comes, while the earth stands forever. The sun rises and the sun sets. To its place it hastens there to rise. Going to the south, turning to the north, turning, turning goes the wind, and upon its rounds the wind comes back. All the streams go to the sea, but the sea is never filled. To the place that they go, there the streams keep going. All words are wearisome. There's nothing one can say. The eye is not satisfied by seeing, nor the ear filled by hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. There's nothing new under the sun. If there is something about which one says, look, this is new, it existed already in ages that have gone before us. There is no memory of those in the past, of those in the future. There will be no memory among those who will come afterwards. The introduction to Ecclesiastes. And we have this tedious repetition, oppressive repetition. Days, you know, sunrise, sunset, the days go by, the years go by, the generations go by, and we won't be remembered. You won't be remembered. What is really worthwhile? Under the sun, as he says, everything is wearisome. This is not the language of Proverbs. That's much more optimistic. Nor is it the language of Job, although there is a similarity I'll explain in a moment. One of the key words in the book of Ecclesiastes is the word emptiness, Hebel in Hebrew. Hebel appears 38 times in these 12 chapters. Emptiness, vanity, meaninglessness. And that is life without God, because apart from God, ultimately, everything is meaningless. Now, in Ecclesiastes, we find a perspective almost the opposite of Job and his friends. They believed that God would soon reward or punish every action. So you know if you're doing well because life is good, you must be pleasing God if you're prosperous. And if bad things happen, so they thought, then you've fallen out of favor with God. They wanted to know where they stood with God. And so they imagined that God was controlling everything more than he really was. They imagined that God was too near, too close. The word in theology is immanent. Immanent. God is immanent. Well, yes, he's in our world and he's close to us. But how much does he control or micromanage? Now, in Job, remember, that's that perspective. But in Ecclesiastes, as we'll see, it's the opposite. God seems so distant, you wonder, well, does he even care? Whatever is going to happen is going to happen. And, you know, there's not much sense of a warm walk with God, like we saw in David's life, not here. So it's the opposite of Job's perspective. And yet both perspectives are unbalanced. Well, Solomon in Ecclesiastes is going on a search for meaning. What is worthwhile? And he has unlimited time, it seems, and certainly unlimited funds. And so he tries all kinds of things, from hobbies and activities to music and people, women. He tries so many different things, and he's trying to figure out what is worthwhile in life. And he's searching for meaning, and he shows us repeatedly that without God, everything is empty. Now, the phrase, you won't find the phrase without God. The phrase is under the sun. Of course, all the world is under the sun. But I think in Ecclesiastes, under the sun means life apart from God. And in this case, we are empty. Nothing fills us up. No pleasure, no learning, no activity. We're bored. There's a God-shaped hole in us. This is not in Ecclesiastes. This is Pascal. But there's a hole in every one of us. Our heart is empty. And until God fills it, because it's a God-shaped hole, we will not be fulfilled. We will be empty. You can see why this makes such a great group Bible discussion, too. Now, I want to ask you, should we strive to imitate these perspectives? I'm going to read a number of verses from Ecclesiastes, I'll take them out of context, actually. Just imagine if this was going to be our view of life. All is meaningless and a chase after the wind. There's no profit under the sun. I knew the same lot comes to both. I said to myself, the lot of the fool also comes to me. So why should I be so very wise? Why even bother? I hated life. Humans have no advantage over animals. All is vanity. I praised the dead who had long since died more than the living who must still live. Better than both, the one who's never lived, the one who's never seen the evil work that is done under the sun. He's saying it's better just not even to be born. What advantage have the wise over the foolish? Better is a good name than a good ointment. Better is the day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to a house of mourning than to a house of feasting. It's a little heavy, huh? Do not be overly just or be wise to excess. Why should you be ruined? Do not be overly evil and do not be a fool. Why should you die before your time? You know, he's looking for a righteous man. And he says, one man in 1,000 I have found, but a woman among all these I have not found, not even one. Everything is the same for everybody, the same lot for the just and the wicked, the good, the clean, and the unclean, the one who offers sacrifice, the one who does not. As it is for the good, so it is for the sinners. Like everyone's getting the same thing. We all die. Again, I observed under the sun that the swift do not win the race, nor the strong the battle, nor do the wise have bread, nor the clever have riches, nor do those who know find favor, but a time of calamity happens to them all. You know, even if you train and you're fast, you may lose the race. Strength doesn't guarantee anything. There's time and chance. Bad things can happen to all of us. Read one more passage. Vanity of vanities, says the assembly leader. All is vanity. So my question was this. Should we strive to have this kind of perspective? Well, of course not. Because if that's how we really felt, if that's how we looked at the world, we would lose all sense of wonder and faith, that childlike acceptance. That's good. There'd be no joy, no hope. See, he's showing us by a negative example how not to think. And you've got to wonder, well, how did he get to the point where he had such a uneven, unbalanced kind of perspective? Well, I think we can answer that. Just think of Solomon's life. 1 Kings 11 is one of many chapters that's very important to know in the Bible. In the law, there were warnings that the king must not accumulate lots of money, lots of horses and chariots, or a harem, you know, these multiple wives or almost wives. He should avoid idolatry and he mustn't be careless. But when we read 1 Kings 11, we see Solomon did just that. He made alliances with foreign governments. He put his trust in diplomacy and statecraft instead of really putting his trust in God. He had all these wives, and each wife had a different god, and he supported their gods because he supported their wives. So he was even supporting some of the horrible gods and goddesses for which the people of the Promised Land lost the land. Now, the good news is, Christians, we never need to be empty. Jesus Christ has redeemed us for an empty way of life, 1 Peter 1:18. But still, sometimes we slip into worldly thinking and behavior. We can slip into empty ways, and that can bring boredom. If we spend too little time in the Word, that will affect us spiritually. Boy, I remember one summer, I was spending some time in the Bible, but not compared to normal, not that much each day. I was actually spending more time studying what the Buddha taught. That affected me. Not having the time in the Word, that affects us. Sexual sin has never been a blessing in my life. Has it been a blessing in your life? Unresolved relationship issues. That sick feeling when you see somebody at church, oh yeah, I should talk to him. I need to talk to her. If we have negative or critical attitudes towards church meetings, we will soon find ourselves feeling a kind of a boredom and emptiness. Too much time spent in leisure, recreation, entertainment. And our generation is all about pleasure, the pursuit of pleasure. That will make it difficult to enjoy anything. If we're not involved in bringing the word to the world, if we're not involved in outreach, Christianity can start to feel unreal and untrue. We must give away our faith in order to have faith. Well, I've got a few points of application here, but I want us to remember that the pursuit of pleasure will get us nowhere. Fortunately, the book ends well. He makes the right conclusion at the end. We'll talk more about that next time. But let's get some application points. First, we must reject the lie that the world is meaningful without God. Many people want us to think that there are good reasons to live and be joyful, and without God, things can still be great. But Ecclesiastes shows us that under the sun, without God, no, nothing is ultimately meaningful. Second, let's deepen our spiritual lives. Anytime we start to feel boredom or we're drifting, but if we ever feel any boredom, it's time to draw close to God. That should not be part of the life of a Christian. Third, let's thank God that Christ has redeemed us from emptiness. Fourth, as we try to perceive God, as we try to discern the hand of God, to see what God is doing, to understand God's ways, let's avoid the errors of Job and Solomon. Job's thinking that God is so close, he's monitoring everything, and actually God gives us space. He gives us free will. He gives us time. But the opposite error is no better. And that's to think, well, God is in heaven and I'm down on earth, and so what does he have to do with me? Does he really even care about me? Well, yes, he does. He does care. But he's not so far away, but he's not so close. He's where he should be. Of course, I love that saying, if God feels far away, guess who moved? If God feels distant, guess who moved? Fifthly, let's use this material. Let's use Ecclesiastes in evangelism. Talk about emptiness. 100 years ago, a famous psychologist, Carl Jung, said that neurosis, the central neurosis of our time, is emptiness. Emptiness is the central neurosis. That's our, we're empty. We feel empty. And he's right. But without God, we feel empty. And let's learn the lesson. If you want to continue, read Deuteronomy 17, 14 to 20. In Deuteronomy 17, you'll find the regulations for the king. And you'll see that Solomon violated most of those. And it's when we violate God's word that then things become empty, become meaningless. Without God, living without God, living on our own terms, everything is meaningless. But with God, everything is meaningful. Our next message, the clock is ticking. See you then.